March 22nd, 2018, and call the board study session of the Roland Unified School District Board of Education to order. It's now 3:03. Roll call, please. Dr. Mitchell.
Yes. Lynn Ebenkamp.
Here.
Angelina Pride is absent. David Malkin.
Present.
Donna Friedman.
Here.
Carrie Chen.
Here.
All board members, with the exception of Angelina Pride, are present for today's meeting. Angelina is absent due to personal matters that was urgent in nature, and she just did notify me. She apologizes for not being present today.
Okay. Are there any changes to report agenda?
None from staff.
Nothing. Okay. So may I have a motion to adopt the agenda for board study session Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. Donna move. And Mr. Malkin second. All favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Flex a root. Jamina? Okay. Please rise. His right hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Public comments. Written request to address the board. Dr. Mitchell, are there any requests for comments this evening?
There is one.
One?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Humphreys, speaker. Okay, to read this. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes unless extended to further, limited by votes of the board. A maximum of 20 minutes unless extended by the board is allocated for each subject discussed. Ordinarily, board members will not respond to presentations and no action can be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following the presentation. Mr. Humphreys.
Okay. We want to thank you for providing beyond a reasonable doubt that Assistant Superintendent Alex Flores, a la Superintendent Julie Mitchell, a la the board, specifically David Malcolm and Lynn Ebenkamp, did and have been hijacking the Bond Oversight Committee meeting / authority, as noted by retired committee chairman Harry Peterson. I have also deduced that the reason that John Grant did not and will not receive a letter of appreciation for applying for the committee is that John let it be known that, as a member, he would assure that Alex Flores would not be allowed to speak unless spoken to. We must thank Mr. Flores also for saddling the committee with Denise Jackman, whose application once denied because she thought the Roland Heights Coordinating Council was a business. We are now plagued with her buffoonery, as noted in her comments to me about Mr. Peterson and her rationale for voting. And I quote, "I sure hope you got all responses you wanted to the letter that you wrote for Harry to read. I witnessed most of the issues and you wrote for Harry. Your interpretation of the events is wrong and you should know since you have the videos. It is clear that the influence you have over Mr. Peterson is strong, and that's why I nominated Natalie last night. We certainly don't need another blind follower of yours on the board. You state correctly that you have the right to video record. However, it is stated in the Brown Act that you do not have a certain location. That is likely that you will be awarded to the provide the district for media. And I thank you for considering me to be a media person. Remember, you can sleep with pigs, but you will become one of the family and smell the same. There is no lipstick that will stick on this pig. Mr. Peterson notes that a grand jury is the only tool to expose what in the minds of many is criminal and destroy the culture of effete arrogance whose primordial fear is of transparency. Yes, pink underwear for all. Can any of you tell me which prior board member told this reporter when asked about people want to know where the money's being spent? It's none of their bleeping business. The only way we can move forward is if we're honest about our past. And any time that the district wants to take over the video recording, I'll be glad to. Right off into the sunset. Thank you.
The next item is the LCAP mid-year progress review. We have an overview on local control accountability plan mid-year progress goal 1 and 2. Dr. Mitchell.
Thank you very much. So this afternoon, we have members from our Ed Services team here to present to the board about our LCAP goals 1 and 2. Prior to them getting started, I also would like to recognize and thank Ocean Wallen for being here at our board meeting today. She is filling in for Brandy Chapman, who is ill and also preparing for a trip where she leaves to chaperone with her daughter to New York. So thank you, Ocean, for being here with us today. I appreciate it. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Brian Huff. So Dr. Huff will start our presentation, and then members of Ed Services team, including Sylvia Rivas, Miriam Kim, Frank Chang, Tricia Colella, and Rocky Better, will share information as, again, it relates to goals 1 and 2. Brian?
Some of the key actions around supporting this work has been, first of all, instructional coaches. So there's been a big investment in the instructional coaches. We look forward to sharing a lot of the community feedback and the feedback from teachers and students around some of these actions. And instructional coaches already, as we're analyzing that data, is showing up as one of the very positive
Okay. Can you hear me now?
That's better. Thank you, Brian.
Okay. Should we start over or no?
No.
Okay. So instructional coaching is initially where we're looking at the feedback is coming up at the top of the barrel in terms of positive feedback from teachers and from sites. And then as we look at the content area support, as I mentioned, we'll go into more depth in a minute, but the elementary sites have chosen a focus area. And then the secondary, at the secondary level, each content area has a leadership team that's driving that work that Frank Chang is leading and gave a very descriptive update in the packet. We've also, as you know, shifted and provided more planning time for collaboration with teachers at the site. So music and PE planning time is now available, common late start and early dismissal times that allows teachers to come together that teach around the same content area and plan and collaborate. So the next few slides highlight an overview of the different focus areas that Dr. Colella has put together that sort of synthesizes the different flow of the different focus areas that we're training teachers in this year. For literacy and reading, we have two sites, Killian and Northam, that are focusing on that. And their focus is around small group instruction in the reading workshop. So how are you pulling students in together based on data and the needs to reteach and then give them specific strategies? So as we walk classrooms this year, we really see an increase in that strategy of, and as you walk as well, I'm sure, see that teachers are pulling small groups and providing that differentiated instruction what students need. We have a larger group of elementary schools that are focusing on writing, so specifically conferring in writing workshops. So where a lesson might look like a mini lesson at the beginning for a whole class mini lesson on a specific strategy, and then getting circulating the room and meeting with individual students about where they are with their own individual writing. And so that strategy, like all of the focus for this year, is really focusing on where are the students at? What do the students know? And how can I change my instruction based on what the students know? So this strategy of conferring in writing workshop gives teachers that strategy of being able to understand where their individual students are and how they can plan their instruction to address their needs. The third area of inquiry, you can see the four schools that are focusing on this, focuses on student questions. So what are the questions that students have, and how can we use those questions to then design content and instruction that is relevant to them, that they're curious about, and crosses all that connects to all the different content areas. So these are the sites that are focusing on this this inquiry approach to instruction. The last focus area in elementary is mathematical practices. And like all the other ones, the strategies are what do students know and how do I adjust my instruction based on what I'm learning. So the strategy they focused on are number sense routines and getting students to talk, listening to their thinking, their mathematical thinking, and then adjusting their instruction during the regular math block based on what they've learned about what students know. So it really, we see a lot more students talking in the classroom during the math instruction rather than doing worksheets of problems. Students are now talking about how they would solve a problem and sharing their strategies with other students and learning from each other. So the secondary focus, as we mentioned, has been grounded in the Roland framework for teaching and learning. And across all content areas, how do you design lessons that are with engaging activities, with objectives that are skills-based, and then using the data throughout the lesson to continue to adjust your instruction and make plans for tomorrow and the next week based on the data that you're collecting. So the principals have taken the other elementary planning. We've hired outside experts to come in and to lead that training. At the secondary level, the site principals have worked with some consultants to then lead their own sites on their PLD days, on their professional development days with their sites. So we are in our first year of implementation for a lot of the materials that were adopted last year. So you can see down the line the textbooks that were adopted last year, and we're in our first year of implementation. All the teachers have received their baseline training from the curriculum providers. And one of the emphasis that we're trying to make as we go throughout this year is that the textbook is a resource. So as they learn about what the students know and what they need, that they draw on the textbook and maybe other resources as well that that will meet the needs of their students. For our local assessments, we continue to administer the SBEC interims as our as two local checkpoints, and we provided that update for you in the packet. And our universal screening instruments for ELA and math at the elementary level. This year, we've also started a partnership with the SCALE Center, which is the Stanford Center for Assessment and Learning. And with about four other districts in the region, we have sent a team of science teachers and coaches to develop performance tasks that are aligned to the new national next generation science standards. So that has been very successful this year, and we look forward to continuing that next year. Our ELD portfolio continues to be implemented at the secondary level. We, as you know, received the Golden Bell Award for that assessment, and we look forward in the next couple of months of getting back the very first LPAC results that will align to that portfolio. So we've been given the portfolio for a couple of years now at the secondary level, which shows about half of our ELD 1, 2, 3 students at the emerging level, and about a third of them at the bridging and then expanding, and then about 15% at the bridging. So we look forward to seeing how that matches up with the state assessment when those results come in at the end of this year. Pass this now to Sylvia Rivas, who will take us through the work done for English learners.
So as you know, English learners is one of our targeted subgroups. It is a targeted subgroup for our LCAP and also our targeted subgroups for many of our federal grants. And just like other students, we are really focusing on making sure that we are differentiating the instruction for students at that level. At the bottom, we have Carolina Hernandez, who is one of our dual teachers, and she's learning new apps to implement in the dual classrooms. One of the things that we've been focusing on for EL, or English Learner Program, is integrating technology and how do we make that useful for kids and how do we use that as a formative assessment. We also have our big picture is we have Erin Maldonado, who is our teacher at Nogales High School, and he is providing instruction for a small group of students. And then in the back, you could barely see, it's Patty Mendoza, and this is a co-teaching model where actually we had Erin Maldonado, and we also had Gus, who's our math program specialist, and Patty, working together and working with our newcomers that have just arrived. So this class, this class are all first-year students in the U.S. One of the things I wanted to mention is that along with our ELD portfolio, we are being featured in different areas for our evidence-based practices for EL. So, for instance, we have presented at LACO for our LA County Office of Ed for our newcomer program, which is our kids that are at the beginning levels of ELD instruction. We have also partnered with EdTrust West, which is a think tank for English learners and also for evidence-based practices. And we are presenting at the California Association for Bilingual Ed next week on our evidence-based practice, and it'll include EdTrust West, and it'll include Stanford University and Roland Unified. So they're looking. We're still waiting because they came and observed us, and they did video, and they had some talks. They still haven't published their math report, but they have published the majority report that you might have seen, where it focused on Nogales High Schools and their practices for English learners. So we have several support programs or initiatives to support our students through the process of English language development. So our English learners, as you know, they have a dual purpose, which is learning the content and also learning language at the same time. So it becomes a little bit more challenging for them. So and also our teachers, because our teachers need to be doing the designated instruction, which is what happens in their ELD class. And that's where we have our beginning students to advanced students. And then they also have to focus on our integrated English language development instruction, which is what happens in the social studies, math, and history classes. So if you can imagine, we have our kids some need that additional support based on the fact that when they go to history and math, they're not only learning that content for the first time, they're also trying to struggle with language. And that's when we have really looked at our ELD standards and looking at how our teachers are implementing them, just as Dr. Huff talked about in terms of using the book as a resource. We do have a new ELD adoption, and we've been doing a lot of training on that with our elementary teachers and also our secondary teachers, but we want them to really focus on the standards. Our ELD portfolio, that's something that we continue to focus on with our secondary teachers. They meet pretty much at least every 2 months we meet, and we discuss student work. We discuss what we have done in terms of integrating technology, and we do lesson design. Which leads me to Achievement Made Possible. That's one of the initiatives that Dr. Mitchell had proposed for us two years ago, in terms of how do we bring technology and support with EL practices. And we have a group of teachers, K-12, that we also meet with, and we actually do book studies. We look at different tools for EL assessment, and we also look at different tools for promoting English language development. And one of the new things we're doing this year is that we're trying to partner K-EL teachers and high school EL teachers. So we've already developed one good partnership with the Roland High School teacher and one of our elementary teachers at Hurley Elementary. And what they're doing is through an online platform, the high school kids are developing stories or writing stories and sharing them with students. And also our elementary students are learning about what high school is. So and what they're doing is really integrating reading and writing, but really using it for authentic purposes, and also because of the listening and the speaking that's important at that level. We also have several targeted interventions. We have for English learners, not only we have newcomer challenges, we also have our challenges with our long-term English learners. So we have specific programs that work side by side with students, and we looked at what does the research say, and in terms of LTEL students, is really providing that academic language. We've implemented the past 2 years a blended program with technology and English language development. And, of course, teacher practices, that's going very well. We expanded to all ELD classes at the secondary level, and also we started with some classes at the elementary level, because at the elementary levels when we begin to see some of the at-risk long-term English learners, so we want to obviously use preventative measures for that. We also focus on our vertical articulation for English language development, because we want to make sure that rigor is there And as the kids progress from grade to grade and school to school, that there's a seamless process for our English learners, because a lot of the things that usually happen in many districts is they either get stuck in a class or they don't have access to other classes. So we're really focusing on making sure that when we schedule students at the secondary level, they have access for college, obviously college courses, and also that we're pushing them and increasing their English language development. Then we have assessment. So we have a big change this year. Brian mentioned we have our CELT, which is our California English Language Development Assessment that we've had for many years. That was focused on the 1992 ELD standards. So now we are switching this year to the LPAC, which is our English Language Proficiency Assessment for California. And that includes, of course, all the 2012 ELD standards, that it's very rigorous. So just the way when we switched from CST to SBAC and SBAC became more rigorous, now we're looking at switching to CELT to LPAC. And it's involved a lot of staff. It has involved the assessment department and our special projects office in providing training, providing support, coordinating the logistics of it, because as you know, for this test, it's usually students will most, you get a one-to-one. Part of the test is that one-to-one when you listen and they work, they practice their speaking skills also. And we've also had our summer school program, which Miriam's going to talk a little bit more about, but we've all, during our summer school program, we differentiate for our different populations. One of the things that our parents said, I think many, probably a couple of years ago, is they wanted to have a newcomer class in summer for new students to the district. So that's one of the things that we have, and that's how we differentiate for them. But we also have classes for long-term English learners, and then we look at our reclassified students. And support staff. One of the key things that we do with our federal funds is making sure, and some of our LCAP funds, that they have that support staff for students. Many of our newcomers speak Chinese. So in the past 3 years, we've hired about three instructional aides to service students and work with students at Blandford, Killian, and Alvarado. And just like them, they've joined our big group of instructional aides that we provide monthly training for. And then we also have additional counseling support for our EL students at our at-risk schools. And then we also make sure that in some cases, some of the school sites use their school site funds to reduce class size. In other cases, it's also supported with some federal funding. Then we go into our reclassification rate. This year, it has doubled. But if you recall, last year we had a change in criteria. So it decreased last year, and now we're back because we're back to doubling it, which we've always been above the state average. What we are predicting is that the following school year will stabilize, but we're not really sure yet because the criteria is changing again with the LPAC. So it's kind of a moving target. And that, just like our ELs that do well exit the program and new come in, it's the same thing with reclassification in the state right now. Then we have our long-term English learners, just to give you an example of, you know, comparing our long-term English learners with LA County and the state. So you can see we are below the state for long-term English learners, which is what we want to do. And just as a reminder, our long-term English learners are kids that have been here 6 years or more and have not been reclassified. And then we looked at target interventions. Those there for these students specifically. And I will pass it to Miriam Kim.
Thank you, Sylvia. Okay, so we have ramped up what we are providing and offering our students in the area of additional support and accelerated learning. We've increased access for all of our students at all of our sites to instructional technology, increased our AP and IB offerings, and offerings for our students to participate in a variety of academic competitions, such as the Academic Decathlon, Science Olympiad, and math competitions as well. And you see our students in those pictures there that are participating in those events. So if you take a look at the bullets here that are detailed, again, always looking through the lens of how are we supporting our students and looking at achievement for all of our students, it's about advancing and reinforcing the needs of our students. So as Sylvia mentioned, if you take a look at the first bullet where it talks about summer school, what we provided for our students in the elementary grades, for our students in grades 1 through 6, kindergarten, it's a little too early. They can't handle those longer days, so they have. We start with our first graders. We're able to reinforce and accelerate learning for our students in the areas of English, language arts, and math. We provide enrichment opportunities for all of those subgroups that you see there, our newcomer students, our students who are redesignated, our English language learners, and of course, our students who are seen as at risk. They also get an opportunity to take part in enrichment activities, which are crucial because we know we are truly preparing our kids in the foundational years for college and career, and they need to get a taste of that early on. So they have opportunities in STEAM, robotics, and MAKE. We have partnerships with USC so they can travel over there, be on a college campus, and participate in coding camp over there at USC as well. So that's some of the things that we provided for our summer school students in the elementary years. When you get to the middle school years in grades 7 and 8, again, intervention opportunities in the areas of English, math, and ELD, but also enrichment times for students who may want to take a world language, students who want to take an art class. And we also know that transitioning from an elementary school to a middle school can sometimes be a bit tricky and maybe even a bit scary for our students. So we also offer a welcome to seventh grade class because it's different. Now they're moving on and changing classes and maybe using lockers. So when you get to the high school years for our students there, it's really two areas, to work on either credit recovery in their core areas or looking to take some classes to for advancement. And when you take those classes for advancement, it really allows our students to open up their schedules so that they can have other additional experiences and opportunities in their subsequent years. And if you take a look at the online courses that we offer for our high school students, APEX is for our students who are at our ALP. They are also typically our independent study students. And we also offer Fuel Ed. You might recall that as being Aventa, and that's offered for all of our high school students, Santana, Roland, and Nogales. And these are just, it's just another pathway to graduation for our students who may need to take these courses for credit recovery. So you'll see here a couple of icons that show some adaptive software that's being used at some of our sites. But I'd really like to focus in on the first bullet around the area of small group instruction, and I know Dr. Huff had mentioned that as well, but this has been a tremendous push in our district, and you can find small group instruction happening at every site in all the grade levels. There has been a tremendous uptick in the use and practice of small group instruction because we know that that is where the research shows if you can get into small group instruction, you are really going to make the difference for our students there. So with the support of our coaches, coming alongside all of our teachers, getting more familiar with small group instruction, it's been great for all of our students. Again, you will find support classes at all of our sites and the extended learning opportunities that we now have here in Roland. Our students have a chance to learn during the summer. They have a chance to participate during the winter and also now on the weekends with our Saturday Learning Exploration Academies that were started here by Dr. Colella. Usually kids, when you wake them up and say it's time to go to school on Saturday, maybe they don't want to hear that, but actually our kids love it and they want to go. They don't want to go home. They think it's, you know, it ends too early. So we have multiple opportunities for our students and for our older students as well. There's all of the tutoring that they have available to them after school and at various partnerships as well. And again, the icons that you see there, that refers to some of the adaptive software that's found and used in some of our schools. So here you see quite a few bullets, and again, focusing on achievement for all of our students. One of the bullets there at the very beginning, as we think about preparing our students for college and those careers, we need to expose them early on to activities such as robotics, engineering, technology, all of the various STEM initiatives that we can find. We've increased the opportunities for our students to take AP classes and honors classes. We have ramped up how many schools now participate in Science Olympiad at both the elementary and secondary schools. Again, building on those early foundations. If they start competing now and getting used to it in the elementary years, they'll do that much better once they move on to middle and high school. Our GATE opportunities, having debate teams at a few of our sites. The Compass Learning, some of our students respond better when the opportunities are online, so they access Compass Learning. And another one that's been great, that's been huge for us, we just had the big music showcase last Saturday for all of our students in grades 1 through 6. We joke that it begins with some squawks and squeaks, which is true. However, if you stay all the way to the end of the concert, you can hear the symphony that our students are able to produce. So it really does begin in the early years and carries all the way through to their senior year. And again, the extracurricular activities found for our students in the area of sports, and it's not just at secondary. Elementary students also can participate in intramural sports as well. So now, on behalf of Scott Jensen, I'm going to share a little bit about what's happening in special education. So this year has really been a focus and push on infusing technology with a focus on accommodations with augmented technology for all of our students with disabilities. If you take a look at the very top picture, we have some students who are working through speech, and there's some apps on their iPad that they can have access to through a speech library program. The young man on the right with the headphones, he is accessing the Read and Write program. Our friend at the bottom has a jar full of cubes, manipulatives, that he's using for his math work. And then on the bottom right, you see our older friends. They're working collaboratively in partnerships, accessing the iPad, having partner talks. So again, really infusing technology whenever we can to support our special ed students. So last year was about the piloting. This year, if you notice, all of the bullets starting off with the words full implementation. Okay, so district-wide, we have fully implemented the Read and Write software program for access for all of our special ed students. A few of the highlights from the Read and Write program, because there's quite a few adaptations that our students can access, but just a few, is the speech to text. So when students are able to speak into their device, the computer will technically write it out for them. They find a lot of success for that. They feel really good about knowing that some of our students, it's hard for them to write it all out, but if they can just speak it, it's captured for them right there. Another one is the highlighting feature. Students are able to highlight texts that they find that are important, because we do. We require our students to be able to cite evidence from text. So if they can highlight and go back and reference that, that's to their advantage. And the last one is a picture feature test, which if a student comes across a word that they're unfamiliar with, that they're not sure of, if they highlight and hover over the word, a picture will pop up for it. So they can make that connection right away. For example, they see the word brook, they're not sure, they click on it, and there you see a picture of what a brook actually looks like. Again, full implementation of Google Apps, and not just for our students, but our staff as well. And the implementation of Sandy and FAST. Sandy and FAST is a program that helps our teachers align the students' IEP goals so that our special ed students have access to the core curriculum. We're also looking in some of our schools and implementing and trying out the co-teaching models, the learning-centered hybrid models, which is like a pull-in, push-out program, and the UDL. And again, it's at some of our sites. And again, these different delivery models are there to help keep our students at their home schools. So that's some things that are happening here in our special ed department. And I will pass that on to Mr. Frank Chang.
Questions? Donna?
Thank you for... Hello. Okay, thank you for a great presentation, you guys. I had a few questions and comments, let me see, real quick. The percentage of grades 4 through 6 scoring proficient as defined by at or above 50th percentile rank, the 19.5 was the highest in all the years that have been listed since 2011. So 11, that's pretty great. And then I also like that RUSD has reclassified English learners at a much higher rate compared to the state average. Yay. But I did have a question, but I think we have an update on numbers. On the one that says table 2, I'm on page 26 on the main, on the whole booklet. One, percentage of English learners rated as English proficient at RUSD for 15-16. It says that we did not meet our target. We were at 39.5% with the 5 or more years in the U.S. That, do we have the 16-17 updated yet or no? So.
Go ahead. No, it's you. I want to make sure it never goes to somebody.
So this was based on our SALT, and our old accountability model included like several AMAOs, which was our, you know, all based on SALT for newcomers, for whether they were moving one level or whether they were scoring proficient. So here we have AMAO 2, which continues to be part of our LPAC. But we're not sure how that accountability is going to look yet because we're in transition from 15-16 to now. So the last time they took the SALT was in October. So this year they didn't take, English learners didn't take the SALT, so we won't have that data, but they will be taking the LPAC already and continue to take it till the end of the year and have new data.
It's a different test then that we got the 39.5 as more difficult test.
No, this is the old SALT test.
So why did our score go to 39.5 from 2011? Our lowest score was 49.2, and we went way down.
This is one of the our initiatives is our long-term English learners. Our long-term English learners is increasing, and the just was increasing now, but now we're going back to decreasing that number. So that this is the kids that have been here 5 years or more. Mm-hmm. So is all our long-term English learners. But most of these kids, because you see the classification rate going up, they did reclassify. So at this point, we were increasing in long-term English learners.
So you're saying more reclassified?
Yes.
That's why the number went down, okay.
Is that balance out of the two? That's a great question, but is that balance between we have more students that are being reclassified as fluent, and then the students that are long-term English learners, like Sylvia has shared, which have been here for 5 or 6 or more years, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which to be able to view and then start over again. So like you had longitudinal data from 2011, now we're going to have a new system, and we'll provide that data on an annual basis again.
Okay. And I'm sorry. I just wanted to mention our English learner population is always changing. So, for instance, our English learners that are doing well are always leaving the group, and we're always getting new kids. So we're trying to have initiatives that are sustained, but they're reaching different students because we don't get the credit when we see these and for our kids that we've already reclassified.
And for the new data, for the LCAP for RUSD, it says that, let's see, Hurley went up 10%, and Northam went at 8.7, and Yorbita, went up 10.7. Several. Are these schools going to share what they did with the other schools? Because a lot of our schools went down, whereas these...
Yes. At those three schools specifically, their focus has been on EL, on English language development, but also they have a lot of interventions, several interventions going on during school and after school. So in terms of those are some of ours, our Title I schools. So it's really exciting for me to see that our Title I schools are doing well, but now we need to, spread the wealth and talk. And the principals are articulating with each other.
Oh, that sounds
and sharing
terrific.
Those practices.
Okay, thank you. And then now I'm on page 28 where it says regional district comparison. And this is where we declined minus 2% more than any of the other districts. Everybody else was higher than us with a change. And it's like ELD designated time. I was going to ask about ELD lessons to try what's happening with that.
So for ELD, we have a new adoption with our benchmark, and also we have a new adoption with our Pearson publisher. So what we're focusing on this year is continuing the working on English language development standards, because the teachers at this point had to adopt to first Common Core standards, then the new adoption, and now we're adding the English language development standards. And with our new LPAC, we've already looked at different structures for accountability on the ELD standards with when we integrate technology. So we have at least four schools right now that we're working with the LCAP, and we want to increase it next year.
So it sounds like
not LCAP. I'm sorry, LPAC. Yes.
It sounds like it will go up next time. Well, when I see the ELD lessons, they're amazing around the district. So, okay. And then I wanted to ask also, ELD teacher training, I read about that. And then regional comparison districts, as far as how do you know, I know you talked about newcomers. That was the last thing I wanted to ask about, that we have something for summer school for them. And what about during the year? I know that we have those aides that come and help the other ones, but what about those schools that don't have the aides and a student comes and they don't know any English, whether they're Spanish, Chinese, it doesn't matter. And how does the teacher try to teach them if we don't have a newcomer class that they could go to during the school year?
Yeah, during the school year, the newcomers are being provided English language development classes. And then also they have...
You meant that just a regular ELD class?
Yes.
Or something more?
Yes. And they also have that primary language support. So the reason I focused on those three schools is because for the Chinese-speaking students, it's very difficult to get qualified people. So we do have that support for the Spanish, the students that speak Spanish, but not necessarily for the Chinese. So now that we have that support... Those are really for our newcomers. Most of our newcomers are in Blandford, are at Blandford and Killian, that are Chinese speaking, that need that primary language support. We also do the integrated English language development, which would have been the old SDI practices that we did. So the newcomers, actually, that's one of the programs that has been highlighted because of all the practices that we have with counseling, with intervention, with summer school, and also during the school year. So they do get lots of support, and our newcomers have increased too. So that's something that we are already planning for the future, because soon they will be in secondary, and soon some of them will be obviously seniors or juniors. So we have the continuum of pockets. So every year it's a different kind of a different challenge depending on who our newcomers are. Sometimes they're at the elementary level, sometimes they're at the secondary level. But the languages that we're seeing at the elementary is definitely Chinese, and at the secondary level is Spanish.
And is there any way in the future with the, all these newcomers, if we have more, have a, like a newcomers class to come out so they're not in the classroom, because they don't really know what's going on unless they have a, another student translating after the ELD time?
So we have looked at a variety of different models in terms of, as of right now, we are seeing success with the model that we do have in place. Part of the challenge of the newcomer program is that you have one or two students at a grade level, and so then you end up with multi-grade levels, and they don't have that same exposure to some of the content that's there. And so research, there's research-based studies that support both models. Mm-hmm. And so it's something we have looked at and we can continue to look at, but we are seeing success in the model that we have, particularly now that we have additional success in finding Chinese-speaking aides that can help in the classroom.
Okay.
The other thing I wanted to mention with that newcomer, because teachers will always ask me that questions because they want to know where could we send those kids instead of in my class, is that sometimes it also becomes an issue of access. So it only could be temporary, can't be, because then we have the whole segregation issue. So that's the con of it, that they don't have access to those classes, and then they don't have access to grade level curriculum.
Okay, thank you. And lastly, special ed. I really liked all the things that you explained about what the kids are doing, and that was really good. All those programs, some great things for them. Okay, thank you so much.
Donna basically asked, or I said Ms. Friedman basically asked all my questions, but I want to expand it out a little bit more. You stated at the very beginning, I think Dr. Huff was stating that these are site-specific focus areas for each school, and then you mentioned the different focus areas. If we looked at like page 27 in the more extensive report, where it shows, you know, areas where there's been decline and areas there's been increase, would there be a correlation between those schools that have declined and the focus area they picked? And is there an attempt to try to work with the school sites to focus on those areas where there's been declines?
Go ahead. Okay. So when a site picks a focus around writing, they go deep into that practice to become an expert. It does not mean that they're also not developing their math practice and developing their capacity in all the areas. So the question about, you know, there's a school that declined in math. Are they focusing on math? That is something that we will look at as we get the next dashboard data and as the SPEC data comes in. But I think the goal of these initiatives is that they spread out to all the sites. So all sites have expertise around mathematical practices, around writing workshop, reading workshop, and that the coaches that are developing these begin to spread that knowledge across all sites.
So it's not, we did not do a direct correlation. Uh-huh. We didn't force that issue. The schools worked with their staff regarding the areas that they felt that they needed to focus on. And yes, data was a conversation that was included in that. And they chose either literacy, so reading or writing, mathematical practices, or inquiry. And then from there, what's happening is they're all transferable skills. So as I'm learning something that might be in-depth in the way that I teach writing, it's transferable to the way that I teach with, like Miriam talked about, small group instruction and so forth. Much of it is transferable to other content areas, and we're seeing that transfer happen now as we're in an application phase. Schools can stay with the same focus area or their signature practice for at least one more year, so through the 18-19 school year, and then we'll have conversations about them taking on another one. And through having different focus areas, we now are developing levels of expertise in our district. So I can take teachers from my site
Frank School to look at a practice that they have perfected, but I have not yet. So then we're able to share ideas from within the district and grow that wealth of knowledge together.
Would that be part of the TOSA's responsibility to do that?
The principals are, and our instructional coaches are very much a part of this process as well. So our instructional coaches, having our instructional coaches at each school site, which was new this year, has made this process and the progress that our schools are making so much more rich. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing much more progress in the classrooms in student learning and achievement and teacher comfort as learners themselves. And that support there, having a thought partner or somebody who worked with them. And so, yes, our instructional coaches are there and our principals are leading the way.
Mm-hmm. And I just read an article the other day about the LCFF and the gap between certain ethnic groups, the learning gap, or achievement gap, I should say. And I'm just wondering, when you look at the funds that we receive, the concentration and the supplemental, how does that get folded into this, that we know that those students that are having difficulty are, in fact, getting access to those funds? Because I would assume if you have one student that might have generated some funds, might be in a classroom with 29 other students that don't generate those funds. How does that one student get those funds?
So for our supplemental and concentration funds, we have a duplicate account that is for each school. So they are given an allocation based on that number. So schools that have a high and duplicated account get more money, and schools that have a lower get less. And the way that works is that we are allowed to use it in a school-wide basis because we have high population of socioeconomic and also ELs. So, for instance, one of the things that we've done with our supplemental concentration funds is provide the additional counselors. So it's something that we know that those counselors are targeting our English learners, our foster kids are at risk, but it's also a benefit to all students. So, and another example would be like, for instance, our Compass Learning or our tutoring programs that we have. Sometimes they may be funded with those LCAP funds or SNC funds, but all kids are available, could go to the tutoring, mm-hmm. but it's focused on the needs are, we know it has to be, and the way the state says that it has to be, the funds have to be principally directed toward English learners, foster kids, and low-income students. So when we get audited and they ask, and they pull an expenditure like that, they want to know how is that principally directed towards those students. So we do have an auditing process for that. And the other way is through their purchases, all their purchases that they make, or any program always goes directly to me so that I could make sure that whatever they're implementing or whatever purchase they're making, it is going to be a benefit for those English learners and those low-income students. So there's a process.
Okay, thank you.
We also have a slide that Frank will cover in LCAP Goal 2 that shows a little bit of that disaggregated data. Because we look at that data on economically disadvantaged foster youth and on our EL students. So we happen to have a piece that he's going to be talking about in Goal 2 that shows that around graduation rates.
Could you talk just briefly about your TOSAs and your coaches? Are they used the same? Are they the same people? Are they used differently? Is that within this realm?
Yes. Brian, do you want to take it? Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, so we have a set of 25 TOSAs, instructional coaches that are this year are now assigned back to the sites. And some sites have opted to use their funding to purchase an additional coach to support that process. But the coaches, their primary role is to support their focus area this year and the instructional focus that site has chosen. So a site that's been focusing on writer's workshop participates with the teachers in that and then goes through a coaching cycle, co-planning, co-teaching, providing demo lessons within the classroom to then support that focus area at their site. And then at the secondary level, we have also pushed them back to their sites and assigned them to each of the secondary sites, and they're supporting their teachers in that lesson design process this year.
So our comprehensive high schools have two instructional coaches, and all of our other schools have at least one. And then some of our schools have, those are district funded, and then our some of our schools have used site-based money to enhance that ratio and have an additional coach that's available. And again, as Brian had shared, they concentrate on the focus area. But if a teacher also has an interest in looking at something different, so to answer, I think it might have been Donna's question, if my focus area is writing, but I also want to examine math, the instructional coaches have that knowledge and or have a network. They meet on Fridays and network with each other. So if I have expertise in one subject area or one teaching style and Frank might have something else, then we have a relationship amongst all of our coaches, and Frank may come over and support a teacher with me. And we provide training across. So if I am at a coach and I'm at a math-focused school, I'm still getting training in writing and reading, math, and inquiry.
And would you say the vast majority of the time of the coaches and TOSAs is spent one-on-one with teachers? Or is it in the classroom with the kids?
It's both. It's in small group with teachers. So our teachers have planning time during PE and during music. Our teachers work together collaboratively at least for one of those blocks of time. And so if the grade level is coming together, the coach is often there working with the grade level. And then on the other time, the grade level's together, the coach is with them or individually. So there's adult coaching that happens, and then there is also work that happens in the classroom. So the coach, they may co-plan together, and then they'll co-teach. Or the coach may teach a part of it, and then they'll teach it together, and then the teacher teaches it themselves, and they debrief that as well. So the instructional coach doesn't have the primary instructional responsibility for students. It's that coaching and working with teachers, but they are in the classroom with kids, with another teacher.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
About the coaches, I just wanted to say what a good decision, because after visiting the schools, I always see the coaches either teaching or when we're walking around, because it's real easy to say, oh, they do this. But when you actually see it and when they're planning and you walk in, oh, they're planning, and the coach is right there. They're going over something. And not only that, but the teachers have complimented saying, oh, the coach is helping me in this and this. And it's gotten some teachers that didn't really want to try things. The coach has pushed them a little to let's try it together. And they're trying so many. So I just wanted to say, they're doing a great job, and it was a good decision. I see it working in this district. Okay, that was it.
I have one question for you, yeah. There are two schools focusing on literacy reading, Julian and Northam. And I've seen Northam, the kids, they break down to three groups. And is that read 180? And is that what? I see there's a tool you use, Read 180. Is that how does it work? Is that a...
So at Northam,
yeah.
As you notice, that's one of our schools that has increased, and they have several interventions. So one of the interventions that they use is Read 180, mm-hmm. and then that Read 180 program, they do break up into different groups, and they do 20 minutes by 20 minutes. So they have direct instruction, then they have small group instruction, then they go online. Then they also have they also use Ingenuity, which is Compass Learning. They use that as another tool for small group instruction. So when the teacher is working with the small group, another small group may be working on Compass Learning. They also do after school tutoring, and they use what they call RAS Kids. So they use a lot of online programs that are adapted and are really exciting for kids, because they want to do it. So they've structured their day in a way where kids that need that intervention is embedded during the day, but they also have some interventions after school.
Schools, implement this?
No, there's
the school use 180.
The only school that's implementing it right now is at the elementary level is Northam.
Okay. Any more questions? No? Okay.
So we're going to transition to goal 2. Frank Chang is going to pick up and kick us off with goal 2.
Good afternoon. So goal 2 is a focus on college and career readiness, focusing on 21st century skills. And you see here in the picture, we have our Roland High School IB graduates, as well as this picture on the bottom of the slide. You've probably seen this pasted all over our district, and we're very, very proud of this. Gina Ward did a great job looking for our future college-going students. And you can see also the sweatshirts that they're wearing. And, you know, obviously we want to highlight Azusa and Laverne. But, man, that sweatshirt that the Stanford student, right? We really want... That's a nice-looking sweatshirt there, huh?
Yeah.
The next slide deals with an overall look at our RUSD graduation and dropout rates. And keeping in mind, this is graduation and dropout rates based on a four-year cohort, right? Ninth grade through 12th grade, and then you finally have, after they complete their 4 years, you then have their rates. We have seen this good data from the previous year in that we have seen grad rates increase overall in our district and then dropout rates decrease. That's where we want. We want increase for grad rates, and then dropout rates we want to decrease. To get into more specific subgroups, we'll go into the next slide. So the next slide points at the subgroups. And as you can see, for the graduation rates, for all of our subgroups, we have seen an increase. We are well aware of the decrease in the special ed population. We are working with special ed department as well as looking at our current practices. We are intently reviewing what we need to do to help our special ed students. However, if you want to turn your attention specifically to the economically disadvantaged students as well as your English learner students, which goes back to something that was actually mentioned just a few minutes ago, of how we're using our supplemental and concentration funding. It is geared towards, these are two of the significant subgroups that we want to work with. And as you can see, the graduation rates over the last five periods that we're monitoring, it's the highest it's ever been. For our socially economically disadvantaged students at 88.5%, that is the highest graduation rate it has been since the last 5 years. And for our EL population, our English learner population, it is the highest it's been. I mean, it's 86%. That's a significant increase from the previous years. And so we do believe in concentrating on these subgroups that really we have seen some good results for our grad rates. The next slide goes to our dropout rates. And again, the dropout rates, we want to see these numbers low and continue to decrease. Again, we are aware of the challenges that we're facing with special ed. We are looking at our practices. We obviously want to decrease the rate of dropouts as we would for all other subgroups. But again, I want to direct your attention to, if I can, to the economically disadvantaged as well as the English learner population for dropout rate. You will see a significant decrease in the dropout rates of these two subgroups, which again goes to the supplemental and concentration dollars that we focus on in the LCAP. Okay. The next slide we are dealing with is how are our graduates actually meeting UCCSU requirements? You know, we want them to obviously graduate from high school, but then be college ready. And so we have CSU and UC requirements. And for the last 4 years that we have tracking here, we've held steady. high 90s, high 30s, and then low 40s. But we're working. We're working on increasing A through G classes. I'm sure you recall the plethora of AP courses that you've been approving as a board. We are definitely trying to increase the number of AP courses. We're increasing the number of STEM courses, career pathway courses. Rocky's been working hard and increasing those courses. We offer a lot of Project Lead the Way courses. And we're also revising courses to make sure that they are aligned through A through G. You remember a lot of AVID courses going through your board approval. Leadership is coming your way. We have courses that we want to make sure meet A through G requirements. And another thing that we're looking at is we're looking at our current high school graduation requirements. Our high school graduation requirements here at Roland Unified, one of the big things if you notice is we only require a two-year math requirement, but CSU and UC requires 3 years of math. So to meet their minimum eligibility, you have to have 3 years of math. So we got to find a better correlation between what our graduation requirements are and what the UCs are asking. So these are some of the things that we will be looking at. Okay. I'm going to go on to the next slide. And so some of the outcomes that we really wanted to see and working towards college and career readiness for our students is to give them counseling support. That's a big one. Counselors do a lot. They do a lot in helping students understand their options after graduating high school, selecting the right courses during high school years, as well as your middle school years, preparing for their options moving forward. We want to make sure we have that availability of counselors. So even though the contract states that for 7th and 8th grade, the ratio is 550-1 for the number of counselors that we have available, and that's for 7th and 8th grade. And then the contract also states that it's 420-1 for our grades 9 through 12. We have reduced that rate, whether through district funding or sites themselves have opted to supplement district funding. And that rate has significantly reduced to a ratio of 412-1 for the grades 7 through 7 and 8 to 345-1 for the high schools. And so that ratio is a very low ratio relative to what you'll see in the state or what you see across the nation. But in those lower ratio, it gives our students a greater opportunity to collaborate with our counselors in deciding on what their career options are. But then it's not just enough that we say, okay, we have lower ratios. We have to make sure that our counselors are up to date and properly trained. So monthly meetings with them, when we bring in outside experts, to give you an example, many of you guys are probably familiar with Bob Tyre. He's coming in April to train our counselors on career options. We send them to UC conferences. We send them to CSU conferences. We invite universities to come on the campuses. We invite our partnership universities to come and speak to them, Mount SAC. There are opportunities to get them trained so that they're up to date on what they need to do to prepare their students for college and career readiness. We also have our students and our counselors oversee this. We have our students go online to an online platform. Currently, we're using a platform called California Colleges or CCGI, and they complete milestones. And these milestones or activities are focused on what their interests are, their current interests, which could change as they get older, right? I mean, if you start in seventh grade, your interests might change by the time you get into 12th grade. What your interests are and how they correlate to certain careers. What are the universities that offer these careers? What are the career options that you have after high school or after when you graduate from college? All of these kind of activities they do from 7th all the way to 12th grade. And we do have a very targeted support for our newcomer students as well as our long-term EL students in counseling support. That's something that probably contributed to a lot of the grad rate increase for our English learners. And we're very proud. AVID, as you know, is a program that focuses on getting our students ready for college. And we have seen a significant increase in AVID enrollment over the last 5 years. From 2013, we had 233 students. Now we have 503. That's an increase of 126%. We're very, very proud of that. And also, we see that each and every year, our AVID seniors have hit around 90 to 95% getting accepted into a four-year college or university. Last year, it was 92%. Now, they got accepted. Whether or not they choose to go is a different story. Economics plays a big factor for a lot of our students' decisions. But their students are ready, and they got accepted. And that's a great thing for what AVID is able to achieve. Moving on to the next slide. So we have started a partnership this school year, 2017-2018, with Mount SAC for dual enrollment. And dual enrollment is the opportunity for our students to get college credit while being a high school student and taking those classes on our high school campuses so they don't have to go to Mount SAC. Now, I know Dr. Mitchell has been trying to develop and push this thing forward for more than just this year, but we finally did it, and we've been able to offer our students cultural anthropology, criminal justice, sociology. They get college credit, and it's transferable college credit. So by the time they get into college, they're working towards a lot of their graduation requirements at the college level. So that's definitely a plus for them. And, of course, you know, we have a partnership with University of Laverne and Azusa Pacific University, and they've done a great job. Today, Santana just had a college and career fair, and APU was there and, you know, really pushing that partnership with our school, our district. And they, as you know, give a guaranteed admissions to our graduating seniors, and they also give a $10,000 scholarship for each year that they are undergraduates. And Dr. Mitchell has started a direct communication with Grand Canyon University, which is a university in Phoenix, Arizona area, I believe. And we also want to be able to offer them a similar opportunity, in which it's a guaranteed admission and an annual scholarship. So we're going to continue those kind of outreach to build relationships to universities so our students can get an advantage and a leg up when they graduate high school. Okay? I'm going to transition over to Tricia Carolella.
Okay. Another way that we're preparing our students for college and career is with educational technology. So since everyone here in Roland has an impact on student learning, we're really making sure that everyone gets the same opportunities. So as the students are learning through hands-on discovery-based learning with some of the tools with technology, everyone in Roland is also having those same learning opportunities. So the classified staff and the certificated staff have all had those experiences where they get to explore and connect with some of those creative technologies that the children are discovering as well. You'll see up in the top, that's this classified staff, and they were exploring the Makey Makey, which is a tool that has a physical component that connects with the computer, whereas when someone has something such as a video game that might be programmed in a block-based programming language such as Scratch, which we might see students doing in classrooms right now, they're able to manipulate what happens on the screen based on that physical connection. Down in the bottom right-hand corner, you see the child doing the exact same thing. So this way, when we're walking through classrooms, and they're, even if they're just passing someone in the playground, they have something shared that they can talk about. Everyone's had that same shared experience. Some other things that we're doing in the area of educational technology relate back to the instructional coaches that we were talking about earlier. In addition to all of the great support they're providing in the classrooms and for teachers and for students across Roland, they're also really integrating a lot of the technology. So now we have the coaches working together to learn together in the same way the students, the classified, the certificated staff have all been doing. And they're actually integrating all of that in their lessons. So across Roland, we see the instructional coaches also integrating technology. Project AMP, led by Patty Mendoza, Achievement Made Possible, has also had a huge educational technology component involved in it. So she's been pairing, as you heard Sylvia speak earlier, she's been pairing the high school students with the elementary school students. She also has been experimenting with something that's quite unique in that she's created almost a school within a school, but you don't have to be in school to partake of it. So she's created small videos in different areas to introduce vocabulary, and children all across Roland are able to access that during their ELD time. Very creative and unique. Another success that we've had in Roland is the badging system started by Brandy Miller. So each year it's grown. This year we have many teachers across Roland participating in the badging system. And so we also have some administrators who participate in that as well. So that's really along the lines of personalized professional learning. They're choosing what they want to learn. And then the best part is that then they're sharing it with everyone else. So part of earning a badge is that you have to share back. So there's evidence that they did learn it, but there's evidence that they really care about their other people across Roland learning it as well. And this way, it doesn't matter what you do or where you are, you have the equal access to learning. Q conferences, that stands for computer using educators, have been huge. The participation of teachers and administrators across Roland this year in all of the Q conferences has grown tremendously. So we've had three huge Q conferences that have been had great Roland participation. And in the fall, we had the Napa Q, it's called Northern Q. Then we had SGVQ, which stands for San Gabriel Valley Q. And then we recently had the National Q, which was in Palm Springs about a week or two ago. The most exciting part of all of that, I happen to think, is the SGVQ, because we had over 100 people attend on a Saturday by choice, and we had such a great turnout that they gave us our own dedicated table that had Roland Unified School District on the front. And we even had our own registration system because they knew we would have so many. So that was very exciting for all of us. And then at National Q, we had great representation as well. We had 52 people there, which, as far as I know, is the largest school district as well. So everyone's very excited. I think the most important part, along with just attending a conference, is that there's such intentionality behind the debriefs that occur afterwards. So we don't just go. Everyone gets together. It's already pre-scheduled, and there are intentionally designed debriefing opportunities at the end of each day when everyone can share and then actually come up with an action plan on how are we going to go back and share with our colleagues so that we can spread it and it can scale across Roland to benefit every student. Another conference opportunity that we have is through the Coatsin Foundation. So the Coatsin Foundation offers conferences. Many teachers and administrators have been able to participate in those. Those tend to be along the focus area, content areas, but many of the other opportunities that teachers have taken part in this year in particular have been just observations through other schools through Coatsin, and that has opened up that opportunity for all of us. The instructional aides training, as Sylvia mentioned, everyone has had an opportunity to have some of the educational technology growth opportunities, and instructional aides have also had those opportunities. Parent STEAM nights have been very exciting. Each school has been creating it one way or another based on their own culture and what their teachers would like to do. The teachers then take the leadership role, and they're leading some of the sessions. The parents come, they learn alongside the students, the teachers, and the administrators, and it's all hands-on, discovery-based, and they're extending what they're doing during the day. The use of space and time is the current focus of the Future Ready. We're in year two of Future Ready, of their Future Ready plan on a 3-year plan. And what we're really doing with use of space and time is looking at how are we designing our classrooms. Is there a way to redesign the use of space in the classroom to better maximize learning opportunities for students? And a lot of that goes side by side with small group instruction, which you've already heard a lot about. Next, we'll be looking at how can we reorganize our time. Is there a way that time can be maximized? And what can we do about extending learning outside of the school day, which we've already explored in many other ways you've already heard, such as the other extended learning opportunities. And then we have the Roland's Innovative Learning Conference coming up on April 21st, where we have some experts coming in, and we already have over 115 teachers and administrators and support staff across Roland choosing to attend that conference. So that's very exciting. We also have some people from outside of the district who will be joining us so we can have some great perspective and sharing and some incredible depth of learning. And again, that's an optional activity that people are choosing to learn on a Saturday. So personalized professional learning has really grown across Roland this year. In terms of support staff and student support, we're really focusing on the 21st century classroom goals that we have had for the last few years. So making sure students have access to the opportunities in classrooms with the devices. So our device rollout continues, and students are having more opportunities to work together in collaborative groups, work independently, and then be able to take some of that learning outside of the classroom to share together and create. So you're seeing students doing more creation this year than you've seen ever before. Again, we have the use of space and time is in the area of student support, making sure we're always thinking about how to best maximize student learning opportunities and what is best for the learners in our classrooms. Checking out Chromebook Pilot, we're doing that right now. We're trying to figure out what is the best way to give students access to Chromebooks if they don't have them already at home. And so we have a pilot going on right now where we're trying to see what would happen if they had 24-hour access with a device that came from Roland. That's a small pilot that we are investigating expansion opportunities. And finally, the mobile hotspot pilot. We're looking into ways to get Wi-Fi into the homes that still lack access. And so we've had conversations with different companies on what we can do. We've applied for grants, and we're just in the holding pattern waiting for the word back on those grants. But we are still ambitious in getting mobile hotspots for our students. So overall, the area of educational technology is really focusing on not only college and career readiness, but also we're creating a pathway towards the CTE. Some students might go down that path, and then they'll be more well prepared for that as well.
Well, thank you. Nice transition. The last few slides here relate to our district's career technical education programs. As you're aware, we are continually reviewing our course outlines in CTE, specifically as it pertains to the now college and career dashboard and identifying sequences of instruction, making sure that we have participants, concentrators, but more importantly, completers, because that's the measurement now that the state is looking at as it pertains to college and career. So we are revising courses. The next board meeting, you'll have two new courses to approve, an Auto 3 course, which will complete our sequence for our district. We already have Auto 1 and 2. Auto 3 will be the completer course. And then we'll also be presenting to you an advanced nutritional design class, which will fit with our culinary side. All these courses are involved with our advisory committees. Subject area advisory committees are required to review all course curriculum, make recommendations and suggestions so that what's taught in the classroom is relevant to industry and help students move forward. Mount SAC is a great partner with us. We have articulation agreements, and currently 22 CTE courses are articulated with Mount SAC, which requires the teacher to meet at Mount SAC with the job-alike teacher in that program area to review the curriculum, review the textbook, and make decisions on what will be allowed, whether it's credit by exam or a project-based exam that allows the student to get advanced standing at Mount SAC. In addition, the last area, bullet point, is our CTE A to G courses. As Frank alluded to, we're working on that continually to identify the A to G courses that we can submit for approval. We currently have 41 CTE courses, including ROP courses, that meet the A to G requirement. The majority are in G. We have quite a few in the F area, which is fine arts. We also have a couple programs in the math area. The dashboard, as I alluded to, if you take a couple seconds to review the data here, this is the baseline data that we're looking at right now, and it shows how our students are prepared. In your package that you were given, it has the chart indicating how we identify students and how they're determined as a completer. You can see for our district that out of the 951 students, let's just call it 60% are prepared. 32% are approaching prepared, and 9% are not prepared. As it relates to that data in the San Gabriel Valley, our district is far and away much more focused, and our students are better prepared leaving us because they have met the requirements as it relates to the dashboard on College and Career Ready. The last slide is pictures that we decided to identify. Our new CTE logo in the top. You recognize the connections to future event, which would be Dr. Mitchell shaking hands and then a student presenting our keynote speaker at the event. In the lower right-hand corner are FCCLA, Family Career Community Leaders of America, award winners. Just to let you know, at this last year's regional competition, seven of our students are now regional officers for the region for FCCLA. On the upper left-hand and lower left-hand corner, again, those are our senior seminar students with their project presentations, which we just concluded today with the Nogales, 2 days yesterday and today. Roland was last week. And so this is the culminating for students that are getting certification, not required for graduation, but the certification of taking the five courses in a sequence, maintaining their grades, doing the internship, and then coming up here in end of April, beginning of May, probably end of April, will be the exit interviews that will allow the student to now share their portfolio of 4 years of work with the three industry folk, asking them questions as they would in some type of interview process, having the student defend themselves as it relates to their portfolio. So that kind of wraps up my section.
Any questions for both of you, or do we want to go through this now?
Okay.
The last two slides just explain, kind of circle back to the rest of the year and how we're going to be updating you on year two. So these are photographs of the focus groups that we're conducting right now, and this is part of how we measure success in Roland, is what are students saying about their experience in the classroom and in schools. A few weeks ago, one of the county consultants for LCAP came and sat in on one of these, and they were so impressed with how Roland is going through this very in-depth process of listening to students every year. They asked us to come share this morning, so we actually went out this morning and shared our process and how we are doing that and listening to students, and that's alongside a test score, alongside a grad rate, it's alongside we are listening to the authentic voices of students as part of this LCAP process. So they were very impressed with how Roland is handling that. So as we shared, we're in the middle of updating the board on year two. We are in year one of a three-year plan. We are in the process right now of writing year two of that 3 year plan. So you can see all the ways that we're meeting with stakeholders right now to gather input and feedback on how this first year has gone, and including a community survey. We will be presenting the year one annual report in June. We'll go to you as a board, in May. And then we will also at that same time present a draft of the year two plan for next year, which is what we are currently in the process of writing. And then the final board meeting of the year, we will present the year two final draft and the budget approval. Through this process of doing the LCAP, we will also be writing an LEA addendum, which is required with the receival of federal funding. So that will be a part of the LCAP that we present to you in May. Yes, this is the last slide.
Any questions? Yeah. Lynn?
Yeah. Regarding your counselors, that was in this section, right? How do you measure the success of counselors? Who evaluates them, and is there a process for evaluating how successful they are with our students?
Well, the evaluation process is done by the site.
So the evaluation process is done by site administration, and they evaluate them based on whatever the contractual agreement is on what their criteria are. But we evaluate them at the district level based on the student outcomes. So, you know, like some of the student outcomes that we're looking at, like you have seen, is like the A through G, how many of our students are getting into those classes, what sort of classes are we offering, are we guiding our students into the programs that will have success, are we guiding them into programs that, such as our career pathway programs, our AVID programs, our IB and whatnot. They play a critical role in that. We also look at our, we monitor their interaction with their students, so we have set up data points in which we monitor exactly how many times each one of our students has been, for lack of a better word, touched by a counselor, a one-on-one interaction. So these are some of the monitoring points. So ultimately, the success is based on how students are doing in their classes, how are they prepared for assessments, how are they graduating, et cetera. So they're a major contributing factor to that.
Well, that pleases me to hear, because it's vague in a way.
Yeah.
And it's good to know that both at the district level and at the site, you are looking at. Because, you know, like every profession, every job, there are some that are better at it than others. And we want to keep the best and keep growing the best.
Yes.
And keeping the best.
Yes.
Do we, this might be something you need to get back to the board with Julie, but do we have some special partnerships with the nearby universities to come to campuses to teach advanced learning like robotics, like coding, that kind of stuff? Or are we just, do you see it coming in the future, or have you?
You have the answer to it.
So do we have opportunities for colleges to come onto our campuses to teach? Well, we do have the dual enrollment opportunities. But if you're speaking specifically about the robotics and STEM classes, we, for example, ROP offers that for us during the summer. So we said, okay, we're going to bring them on. For example, we're exploring opportunity with APU to see if they can, in fact, come or our students can go and experience the college and go environment. So, yes, we will explore that, because as long as there's a partnership, we want to be able to see if there's an opportunity for them and us to have that kind of ongoing relationship. Whether or not that happens on our campus during school hours, that's a whole other discussion that I think we need a deeper dive into, that I'm going to pass over to the superintendent to answer. But those opportunities after school, summertime, et cetera, we constantly explore. And if the universities actually have people that they can offer to teach those courses, or we have teachers who are qualified to teach courses, then we can offer that. Yeah.
So in addition to that, we do have some opportunities where someone from the from the profession, an engineer or someone from business or whatnot, will come for a single class period or a day and teach the lesson that day and work with students on something that shows the bridge between what's happening in classroom learning and what happens in the work environment and so forth. And so we do have that connection at our schools. And same, even when you look at it from an elementary perspective, we have authors that are well-known published authors that are able to communicate with, I think you two are just having this, that have the opportunity to either come and talk with our students, or we do, have been doing much more with through Skype and expanding the walls of our classroom through the use of technology, because we're able to work with all sorts of folks depending on, they could be any place in the world, and they can help and teach and educate our students. So yes, we do have some of those.
And taking that one step further, if we have a real specialized class, that maybe you have a student here, a student there throughout the district, they're interested in that, you could almost do that with Skype. They could go into a special room or location on their campus to get that information or that lecture, mm-hmm. that class, whatever it is.
That would be through using our learning management system or a flipped classroom type of an idea as well, where it's also live. We have many of our employees are currently engaged in college classes for their master's program, their doctorate program, where they are doing online learning or distance learning. So we have not explored that yet. We don't have yet those distance learning opportunities. We do have, as Frank had mentioned, online learning programs, but it's not through a live feed.
On one of the pages, page 17, on my page 17 of this, the figures with, figure 17. It is, sorry. You list the different high schools, and the percentages have all been going down, which is desirable, including Nogales, which is also going down. The top slide, is that right? On the I'm looking at the dashboard. Dashboard. I'm sorry.
But by going down, it's going up.
The percentage. I was talking about the percentages, but wait a minute. That isn't the one I want.
Right.
Let me find it, and you can come back to me.
Just a couple of specific questions. On the more detailed report, on page 51 to 52, you have a list of all the A through G classes and requirements. I noticed, it's been about 4 or 5 months ago, we approved a book for ASB for leadership to be included as a A through G. Mm-hmm. I noticed that's not listed. Has that not been implemented yet?
Right.
Yeah, there is a, if you will, actually, I think it's listed, I'm trying to find the page specifically. But yes, the leadership course was in fact approved. It was actually a course that was taken as a duplicate of something that was offered already that was pre-approved as A through G. And so the book that they're using right now was approved by the board. And yes, they are implementing. What we need to do though is we have to understand that when we approve something, we're not going retro. So it's ongoing. So what they're doing right now is to pilot to make sure. So they're going to pilot the course, use the course, and then always have that available the following year.
Okay. On page 43, where. This is on the detailed one.
Yeah.
It shows completed grade 12 but did not meet graduation requirements. And that went up significantly this year. It's 20. I'm just wondering, with the increase in counselor, the ratio, yet for some reason this increased, and we have 20 that did not meet the graduation requirements.
I'm going to let Brian. Brian's done a very deep dive working with the team. When we have students who haven't met the graduation requirements, we identify exactly who that student is and what was the reason for it. Mm-hmm. And so, Brian, I'm going to let you address that.
Yeah, so that top row is the number one reason that we have a dropout every year. When we're tracking these dropout codes, and it is, as you mentioned, completed grade 12 but did not meet graduation requirements. You can see over the last 4 or 5 years that's fluctuated up and down. Right. One of the reasons for the bump this last year is we had a cohort of newcomer English learners that arrived at the secondary level, so they're arriving grades 9, 10, a few years ago that are newcomers and did not know the English language. And so as they enter into our high school system, their clock starts ticking, and we are accountable for a 4-year only. Like, if they don't graduate in 4 years, then they are counted as a dropout. So they are, we are tasked with, Sylvia's team will attest to all the work supporting them as newcomers and not knowing the language, and then also trying to help them get a pathway to graduation within that 4-year period. What we know from the research about English learners and acquiring academic language is a 7-year process. So to really become fluent in a language academically and be proficient is around 5 to 7 years. It is a challenge when we get a cohort of students, newcomer students, at that high school level. And so the team has been meeting a lot about this discussion and how are we going to create more pathways to support English learners as they go through their high school experience. But it's a reality of the accountability system and how it's set up.
Okay, on this slide that you have up there right now, the third bullet, you get input from community, parent, student, employee. Do we get any input from the colleges that they go to, whether or not they were ready? Like if they took college chemistry and they had AP, AP chemistry in high school, were they prepared for college chemistry? Do we get input like that at all from the colleges?
We do not, no.
We do not.
We do some longitudinal, have begun some of that work about college completion, but not to the granular level
Okay.
If you took chemistry, are you successful in college chemistry?
Okay. And one thing I was glad to hear, I forget who said it, about the career pathways, and because of economics, some kids don't go to college. And I know when I go to the elementary schools, and the first slide you had with the college, you know, sweatshirts on, that's really pushed quite a bit. You know, I really feel very strongly that every child should have the opportunity to pursue a college education if that's what they want to pursue. But not all careers require a college education. They require a career certificate or some other type of training. And someday I'd love to see a thing that says Stanford, UCLA, and I want to be a plumber, or I want to be an electrician, t-shirt, because those are just as valid as a college university. And sometimes I feel that kids that go into a career such as plumbing or electrician or chef, that they might feel like they're a failure because we pushed college so much in the earlier years. So I really think that career pathways is just as important as college pathways. And that's all I got.
Okay, let's see. The 59.2% prepared for Roland was great on the dashboard. And prepared, only 9% not prepared, almost prepared. But comparing to the other districts, we were like third the highest, so that was really nice to see. Also, we were 13.53 in percentage of grade level, grade 11 students ready for college. I'm not sure what that means. How do they test them to see if they are ready for college? Like, how do they get these wonderful scores that Roland scored high? What do they do? Ask questions to prepare, to know that they're ready.
So are you referring to this slide?
On page 40.
Page 40.
And, 39 and 40, those scores. On table 10, it'll say percentage of grade 11 students scoring ready for college.
Okay. Yeah. So that metric is the Smarter Balanced Assessment in grade 11. So the way they determine.
Okay. And the page before too, the 59.2%. They said they're prepared for college. They're page 39.
Okay. Right. So there are two different measures here. The first one you mentioned that's here on that follows this graphic here is the new college and career indicator that's on the dashboard. And I included this graphic because there are seven or eight ways that a student can meet college readiness. They can pass two AP exams. They can pass two IB exams. They can meet score a 3 on both ELA and math SBAC. And you can kind of go through and see the different pathways. The metric on table 9 that you mentioned, 9 and 10, ready for college on the early assessment program is just measuring how many students are scoring a 4, which is the highest level, on the Smarter Balanced exam in grade 11 in ELA, and then level 4 on the math Smarter Balanced assessment.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The graph for the dropout rate and graduation rate looks beautiful. That's one of my favorites. And then on page 42, you answered my question already. I don't know who was answering, but I think it was you, Frank. I was worried about the Hispanic and Latino at 87.7 and economically disadvantaged, but when you mentioned that we went higher, then I was very happy. So I don't have a question about that one. And David, you took the other question about the 20 students who didn't pass. And let's see. AVID. Oh, I had a question about AVID because I thought it was 100% acceptance rate, and then I heard 92% acceptance rate for people, students that are in AVID.
So the 92 acceptance rate was based on the previous year, and it's an acceptance rate based on a four-year university. Yeah, so that was last year.
So those 8% might have not even tried to go to a college?
Or? Well, the 8%, so we're going to go to that chart. There's a chart there. It could mean that they either applied and did not get into the four-year universities, or that they did not apply, or they did not qualify. You know,
okay.
It could be a variety of reasons. But each year we look at the AVID students and those, the data changes every year. But like I was saying earlier, it's always around 92 to 95%. So that's what I meant by that.
Great. Yeah. I mean, it's a great program. That's good. I see. It's very good. And then we are increasing classes for AP and IB. We're offering more at both high schools, or is it even like 10 and 10 or... What did we do this year? Did one high school get more than the other?
So what it is when we go through board approval is that the courses are offered available for both schools, both comprehensive high schools. And depending on the student population each and every year and what they're ready for, one school might offer a particular course that another school is not. But they're both available to both student populations.
And how do they pass with A, B, C, D, F or...
The AP courses, the AP courses still have your regular grades. You get an A, B, C, D for a pass rate. But then the AP courses also towards the end of the year in May, they take what is known as the AP exam. And then regular passing of AP exam is a 3 or higher. So
a 3 or higher.
Yeah. So it's a 1 through 5 scale and a 3 or higher is passed.
Would it be possible to get the AP scores from the high schools to see what it looked like? Yeah, the passing of each of the AP classes. Thank you. On page 51, this was the articulation activity results for the 16-17 school year. It says that Nogales ROP, 32 students failed the class. Number of passing was 50 out of 82 taking the test. Do we know why that happened? Could it have been the teachers from ROP or on page 51?
This is related to the articulation agreements and the number of students that went to Mount SAC to take the articulation. And so we don't have a lot of control over the ROP instruction in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're just providing the data to let you know the pass rate, the number of applications that were submitted, and the number of test takers and the number passing. As it relates to the role in ROP, that specifically was the photography, commercial photography class at Roland High School, Jerry Crum, the instructor, and he had 100% pass rate. That was noted last year. This is from 16-17. We don't have the 17-18 data yet because students haven't done their test or gone over to Mount SAC to do the work.
Which classes did they, when they went to Mount SAC, did they fail? Like,
well, it depends on the articulation agreement that the student was in. So if a student is in culinary arts and has the articulation agreement for culinary arts, then they have that project that they have to do over at Mount SAC, and then it's scored at Mount SAC. And whether they pass or not, it's up to Mount SAC based on the criteria that Mount SAC sets. For our district CTE, Nogales District CTE, the number of applications was 22, the number of test takers was 22, and 22 passed. That was in the accounting program at Mount SAC, or at Nogales.
Nogales wasn't accounting. They all passed. That's great. Okay, so it was just different classes at Nogales ROP.
Right.
They didn't.
Exactly.
Okay, and the next question is for you.
It's,
they had a pass.
It's an
exam.
Yeah,
it's
an exam.
Right.
But they wanted, correct me if I'm wrong, they wanted college credit, so they went to take, like, the equivalent of a final exam.
Oh, it's for college credit.
It's for college credit. It's the articulate.
Okay.
They went then
I just was thinking the teachers didn't prepare them to be able to.
But it's like Jerry Crum from photography does an excellent job in that communication between the two, knows exactly what the students need to be able to do.
I understand now. Okay, thank you.
That's correct. It's the
great
articulation
test. Before I forget, but Rocky, the last question, and that's for you, is on page 43. I didn't know what unverified adult ed program meant, and five students didn't pass. Dropout reason. I was just wondering what that meant, unverified adult ed program, for those five students.
So when a student is referred to us from the high school, a student that comes to us is 18 years or older on the adult ed side, they enroll in the adult secondary ed program. Whether they're being referred, it's up to the student at that point, since they're an adult, to enroll and continue their education. What the data there is, unverified adult ed program, it's indicating, going back to 2012-13, that we know these many students came to us from our two or three high schools. Whether they finished or not, that's why it's unverified, because we know they came, but then they're referred, and then, right.
Okay. Thank you. You're welcome. Presentation. Thank you.
Okay, I have a question on the dual enrollment with Mount SAC. And what courses are we offering?
So this, for the spring semester, is criminal justice. And then for the fall semester, it was cultural anthropology and a sociology class.
Right. My question is how we determine what course we offer, and in our past experience, are these all these courses are high demand by students, or as any courses we offer, but then nobody is, how is the situation?
Well, actually, the schools poll. They send out polling questions to their student body, and then they also ask the parents. And so when they poll their students, they give them some choices to work out of. So the site administration works with the liaison from Mount SAC. You know, I'm involved as well, but we look at classes that Mount SAC says you can offer, that their teaching body is willing to allow us to offer, and then we offer it as a multitude of choices to our students. The students take a poll, and then they say, you know what, this sounds, out of all the students that were polled or gave responses, this was the most popular choice. They offer that class, and then sometimes, you know, based on what they're offering and what is of what the students have said that they're going to sign up for, 2-3 weeks later doesn't necessarily mean they end up signing up for it. You know, so we have seen that challenge. But we go through a vetting process basically with both Mount SAC and our students to choose the classes.
I think it's very beneficial to our kids.
Yes.
That. But why we have Mount SAC only? Is it very difficult to for other colleges, or are we expanding to other colleges?
Yeah, we're the regional partner for, yeah, that's the region for Mount SAC. So I understand what you're saying. So currently right now, we're with Mount SAC. So
we unless there's something, some reason, like when we've had some challenges mm-hmm. getting this off the ground and developing this partnership, mm-hmm. and so there have been some discussions of going to other nearby, the local community colleges, but we are bound by our district, not our school district, but the community college area, mm-hmm. where we cannot go to another college. Mm-hmm. And so we need to develop that relationship, and it would only be eligible through Mount SAC. Mm-hmm. And it's provided to our students tuition-free and textbook cost-free. So our other four-year universities mm-hmm. may have an interest in engaging in this mm-hmm. with us as well, mm-hmm. but that opportunity of tuition-free and textbook-free mm-hmm. is not there.
Mm-hmm. Like Cal Poly is the one nearby?
Yes, but the kids would have to pay full tuition and full textbooks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Okay, thank you. Lynn?
One more.
Never mind on that first question, but I do have an additional question. Do we offer AVID at all levels? Like, I know we have elementary and some academies that offer AVID. Do at least one of the middle schools have AVID, and the two main high schools have AVID? Is that right?
So Hollingworth, AVID is a school-wide program for the elementary. Right. So yes, Hollingworth is offering AVID at the elementary school-wide. For Giano and Alvarado, it's an elective course with an understanding that the practices and the strategies go into the content area classes. So Alvarado and Giano offer elective classes. And that is the same for the high schools, Nogales and Roland. So next year, Oswalt will be bringing in their 7th and 8th grade students into AVID as an elective course. So that's how it works at the middle schools.
Okay.
Yeah.
So nothing above 6th grade right now that other than the elective courses.
Yeah.
Correct?
Well, that is the way that AVID goes at the secondary school. So elementary is school-wide, and it, the concepts of Wicker and some of the AVID strategies are done in every class. At the secondary level, because all courses then are done by class periods, it is a class period. It counts as the student's elective program, but that work is done in terms of doing all of the preparation that Frank has prepared, that where we've grown 123% and we have 92% college acceptance. So there's AVID tutors that come into that class period that the kids have. They support their academic work from all of their other classes. They make sure that they're on track for college acceptance. So it's a collaborative effort, right, but it is an assigned specific elective class period.
And can I also add on that exactly what Dr. Mitchell was saying is, in order to grow the program, you have to ensure that it's not just the elective class, that one class that they're seeing the AVID strategy. So what happens is, in order to build upon the program, you have to support it by sending all the core content teachers. So, for example, I think Nogales had 40% of their staff trained in AVID. And that's the same working with Roland, is they need to get more of their content teachers so that they're practicing the same strategies throughout the classes. So even though they only take that class for one period during their day, they're seeing those same strategies being repeated in the other classes, like in English and like in math or in social studies and whatnot. So the goal of what we're trying to do is not just to increase the enrollment into one class, but then increase the philosophy and the mindset in all the other classes. So,
I got one more. Just as a follow-up to Ms. Friedman's question to Rocky, you mentioned that the photography teacher, I think you said Mr. Crum?
Jerry Crum, yes.
At 100% pass rate.
That's correct.
He knew what they wanted. is it a possibility that other classes where students are going to be taking a challenge to get college credit, that we meet with those teachers to find out exactly what they want so our curriculum will be integrated and they would also get 100% pass rate?
Well, that's what they do. That's how the articulation agreement is signed. The teacher meets with the college teacher for that subject area. They sit down and look at our curriculum against the college curriculum for that program or that class. Once the college approves it, it's up to the college to accept our curriculum, okay. And then they create the articulation agreement, which is if your students do this, this, and this, whatever that is, this is what they'll get when they complete the agreement, and they come with us and do the test. So in the photography, they have to do the dark room, they have to do black and white print, they have to do a digital print. And so what Mr. Crum does, and Stephanie does the same thing at Nogales, the photography teacher there, they're aware of what's required. They prep the students as it comes close to the time for them to go take the exam or the do the exercise at Mount SAC. And then the student is prepared to go do it. Just happened that Jerry, the kids that signed up to do this because he has 170 students, 19 seniors, wanted to do this, and they were focused and they were successful. So as you look at that data, it is very, for the district CTE, we're very successful because the teachers are articulated. They meet with the Mount SAC teachers twice a year. And then as they prepare the students, they go with the students on the bus to Mount SAC to make sure that they have their support system with them, which is their teacher. And then the students are off and doing the testing. And so I think they're doing a good job. To get 100% is a lofty goal, and that's what the teachers strive for. But it still comes down to that student doing the tasks. They could be prepared, but maybe because now you're in that college environment, in that college dark room, and sometimes you panic and don't succeed. That's part of the whole thing. So, but our teachers do a good job. They really embrace, and that's why Mount SAC is such a good partner with us, because of the articulation agreements and because our teachers embrace that.
Now, I'm just wondering if there could be multiple variables on why a student doesn't pass the challenge. And I'm just wondering, is it a teaching issue? Is it a curriculum issue? Is it a student issue? I don't know.
Yeah. It, typically, with the teachers and having been involved with the same teacher at Mount SAC over time, they have that relationship. It comes down to just the student either freezing or forgetting a step because it's all time. They don't have a long period of time to do whatever that task is. And so it's stressful on the student.
Is there any way that they could practice before going?
They do practice. They practice at the school site. They practice in their classrooms because they know what's required, because the agreement specifies what the requirements are for that class, whatever that class is, whether it's culinary, photography, automotive, whatever that is that they've agreed to, that's what the student has to succeed in to get the advanced 3 credits or 4 credits, whatever that is the agreement.
Any more questions? All right. Okay. Thank you very much. And both groups. And then motion to join the meeting.
I'll move.
Anna, move.
Second.
And any